I'm Christopher Lydon, and this is Open Source with the novelist Helen Oyeyemi, who gives new life to an old line, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" It was, of course, the evil, jealous stepmother's blood-curdling question in the Snow White fairy tale from the Brothers Grimm. Helen Oyeyemi sets it in a modern retelling of that story in a Massachusetts town. Helen Oyeyemi has a way of seeing modern life as a series of fairy tales. She likes to scatter them throughout the forest, upending monsters, undermining as many myths as she can. Her new novel is Boy, Snow, Bird, in which she exposes notions of skin, beauty, race, worship, families, family fights, and fears of all kinds. She's a very accomplished young author by now. This is her fifth book. She was named by Granta one of the best young novelists last year. She's a global citizen, she's terrific fun, and she has a wonderful laugh. Lean in and listen, please. We had a wonderful time on a Saturday afternoon at my house recently. We composed a fairy tale together. Helen indulged us in our open source Proust questionnaire across the board. I asked her to begin with a reading from her new book.
Bird was born in the spring. I say it was born because the pain was so tremendous that I just let it come. It was like quicksand. The only way to make it out alive was to stop struggling against it, to submit. I'm told I was in labor for 13 hours, but I really wouldn't know. There was the quicksand, then there was Bird in my arms, safe and well, and dark. No, it wasn't just her shade of gold. The closer skin could get to the color of my husband's eyes. I think I made some dumb joke. Look at this kid, born with a suntan. It was her facial features, too. As the nurse said when she thought I was too wiped out to hear, that little girl is a Negro. I didn't want to show her to anybody. Not her father, not her sister, no one. The doctor told me that Arturo seemed like a reasonable man, that he could talk to Arturo for me if I wanted, that everything could still be okay, and I realized that he thought he was talking to an unfaithful wife. I laughed and laughed, high-pitched laughter that roused Bird to try to outdo me with her crying. The doctor thought I'd gone to bed with a colored man, and I had. He was my husband.
Helen Oyeyemi, you've created a fairy tale atmosphere that's both ancient and amazingly modern. How do you do it?
Oh, I started with the mirror. That was the person in the Snow White story that I had a quarrel with. Do consider the mirror a person that had a personality, at least. A mischievous one, but that's being on the generous side. The mirror is very, very dark. It makes this declaration and then basically sits back and waits for the women in the story to murder each other or for something terrible to happen. So in my take on Snow White, the question is not so much who's the fairest of them all, but I guess what is real and what is false and what exists beneath the skin. Boy, as a character, is somebody who's half convinced of her hideousness. This is something that her father has persuaded her to believe. And so when she's confronted with somebody as matchlessly beautiful as Snow, she can't believe that Snow herself isn't also hideous beneath the skin. She's just completely unable to trust anything that she sees. And despite being so suspicious of surfaces and appearances, she still manages to be blindsided twice within the story by things that she hasn't perceived.
I'm wondering two things. Where does this come from in your own childhood, your dreams, your own struggles with beauty? But I also want to know, are you and the Brothers Grimm in some strange sort of joint enterprise? Is this what they were doing?
It's interesting about the Brothers Grimm and people like them. I also recently read this book of Czech fairy tales called Kytice, by Karel Urban. And the Grimm brothers and Urban both had this agenda, a very nationalist agenda. So their telling of fairy tales was to do with the origin of peoples, of the native peoples from deep within the forests. And my agenda is basically to take fairy tale tropes and just scatter them throughout, as far throughout time and space as I can manage, pretty much. So we're almost at odds, we're almost enemies. In terms of my quarrel with the mirror, part of it might come from the fact that every few years or so, some scientific study comes out that says, that boils down to black women are the ugliest, science proves it kind of thing. And that always breaks my heart every time that happens. I'm a bit tougher now, but I definitely remember sobbing over that kind of stuff. It connects to the way that the Mirror makes this apparently dispassionate statement. And these things need to be challenged or undermined in some way, and part of the way that we can do it is through storytelling.
You've said that little boys, when you were a little girl, would taunt you with lines like, "Do you know you're ugly?"
Yeah.
And I just wanted to reach out and tell you, boys are evil, and they're just making a pass at you.
Oh, but they didn't say it to other girls. I'd just be sitting on the bus minding my own business, just actually reading a book. And then they would like come up and I'd see a face above the top of the book saying, "Oh, excuse me, you're really ugly." And I'm just like, "Oh, okay, thanks." What
you're
can
wrong,
you say?
Kiddo. Get a life. I'm also thinking of white women. Charlotte Bronte, who was not beautiful, making a character, Jane Eyre, who was the heroine, but not beautiful either. This is a kind of a white hang-up. I mean, maybe everybody hang-up too.
I very much approve of Jane Eyre, though. I think what might have comforted me back then, and what did comfort me when I found Jane Eyre, was that it doesn't matter. Like, in a way, there is a way in which these boys and anybody think that by telling a woman that she's not beautiful that they're ending her life, like that her function in the world is to be beautiful in some way, and that's not all that we're here for. And I think that, yeah, I took heart from the possibility of living a life of the mind, and I thought, well, okay, so I'm not beautiful, never mind, I'll just think and read and write and get on with my life, and it's okay. Like, it's just not, it's not a terrible thing not to be beautiful.
There's so much cruelty, petty cruelty, family cruelty, mini cruelty, among specifically the women, mothers, daughters, stepdaughters, in this book. It's a cruel world, but what are you telling us about this cruel world at a sort of micro, very close-up level?
I think that a lot of this, a lot of these struggles between the women are to do with frustrated hopes and to do with the way that these women find themselves unable to break the rules that confine them and look to each other expecting each other to be able to break these rules, but nobody can. Like, this whole hierarchy of beauty and how it's tied in to race and how that in turn is tied into social class, like, it's so much bigger than everybody, and yet we blame each other for not being able to fix it. And I think that definitely between Snow and Bird, the stepmother-stepdaughter relationship is especially fraught in this book, because Snow has specifically requested a mother for her birthday. and who, how can that possibly be fulfilled by anybody other than her own mother, who's dead? So, yeah, it's this kind of vast emotional abyss in each woman that that they sort of half-heartedly attempt to fill, and it's impossible.
We don't want to know how much money is spent on cosmetics, on advertising looks, on projecting ideal images. I mean, it's kind of a nightmare, but is it more intrusive on young people, especially girls, today than ever, maybe?
No, I think it probably remains about the same. I think that there's this kind of illusion of things being more terrible now, but they actually stay at a constant. I think that people are much more frank about pursuing the perfect appearance. People are frank about dieting, about makeup, about their beauty regime. Now we all have to sort of pretend that we don't really care when we're madly snaffling up the cosmetics.
I have daughters and granddaughters that will read your book. What do you want to tell them?
To beware of mirrors is the first.
How did the story end up in central Massachusetts? Somewhere in Worcester County, I take it. Flax Hill. Sounds like a linen weaving town or something.
I wanted to make somewhere, it was part of the kind of slightly tricky balancing act that you have to do when you're updating a fairy tale. So it has to feel like a fairy tale, a slightly placeless place. But I still wanted to locate it in America in the 50s and 60s because that intersection of the struggle for civil rights and the debate about the value of human beings tied in with the story where a girl is prized the most because of the way that she looks. Like, both of these things was people struggling with being treated in particular ways because of the way that they look. So I needed to make it a fairy tale, but to make it real. And that was the kind of middle point.
The real part we know, but how do you make up a fairy tale? Or how do you know what's a good one to retake?
For me, I think it was wanting to rescue the wicked stepmother. You read the fairy tale and you see how half-hearted her attempts are to kill Snow White, and you think maybe she's not really keen on on this task. It's something that the story wants her to do. And so I thought, well, what if you just give her the chance to do whatever she wants? If you just take her out of that context, put her in another one and see what happens between her and Snow. And yeah, some of the things played out the same way. Snow gets sent away. But other things, I had a particular delight in writing. There's a good punch up scene in the kitchen. And in the UK, people talk quite dismissively of kitchen sink dramas. And I thought, well, I'm going to write a kitchen sink drama.
How long would it take you and me riffing to kind of cook up a fairy tale?
Not long. With two different writer friends over the past summer, we took the same first line and we came up with two completely different fairy tales. It was about 3 days worth of emailing back and forth.
What was the first line?
A princess was ill. Oh my gosh, we have to do it aloud? Okay. A princess was ill.
And the door of her house was open.
So she closed it.
Who closed it?
The princess.
I picture her gasping on her deathbed.
That's good. Okay. I take back that she closed it. A door was open. Through it, she heard faint music.
Hip hop, for sure.
And she called out in a weak voice, "Is the doctor there?" And a man in a tracksuit with gold chains stepped through the door and said, "Yes, I'm Dr. Dre."
"But do you have insurance?"
Dr. Dre swiftly made an exit without saying another word.
And she called her insurance agent and said, "Something must be done. I like that man. There's kindness in that man."
And the insurance agent said, "You're a princess. You shouldn't have an insurance agent."
So she calls on magic powers just in time.
And, seven doctors arrive.
Seven small, gnomish little doctors with little velvet hats on.
Seven small, gnomish doctors arrive with little hats on. And what do they do? They make pancakes. that's
and they all lived happily ever after.
The end.
Right. Helen, would you indulge us in what we call our Proust questionnaire?
I'd love to.
We did this with Proust one time, or he did it with us. What is your favorite fairy tale?
Sleeping Beauty.
Remind us.
There's a great christening going on. A new princess has been born when all of a sudden a lady of dark aspect storms through the crowd, furious that she hasn't been invited. Her name is Carabosse, and she curses the child just after everybody else has poured blessings on the child, all of these unearned gifts of beauty and sweet temperament and a sweet voice. And she says when this child is in her 18th year, she will prick her finger upon a spindle and fall asleep for a century. And everyone is aghast and tries to keep the spindle away from the little girl, but inevitably she finds a way to meet her destiny, which is to have a really good long sleep for 100 years, and which I wish I could do.
Wow.
And, you know, and then the prince comes and then it gets boring.
Helen Oyeyemi, when you walk down the street in Boston, in Berlin, in London, who do people think you are?
It's a good question. I don't tend to notice people noticing me. I'm very short-sighted, and so I can't really see anything, and I like it that way, because then you have more surprises in life go around every corner. So I'm not And I think part of my not wearing glasses or contact lenses might be so that I don't have to view other people's reactions.
But what are they seeing?
Who knows? And also, it doesn't really matter.
When you think of fellow travelers in all sorts of human enterprises, it could be singing, dancing, painting, housewifing, who's doing the work of your spirit out there in a completely different way?
I have to name a person?
Yeah, or a kind of person.
I'm leaning towards music. Maybe, but they're not alive anymore.
It's okay.
Oh, Rimsky-Korsakov.
Wow, good.
I keep listening to the Invisible City of Kitej, which is, I guess, his musical retelling of an old Russian fairy tale. And it's so beautiful.
Mm. Who would you be if you couldn't be you?
Tracy Chapman. I, in fact, started dreadlocks because of Tracy Chapman.
What's the talent you'd most love to have that you don't yet?
I always wished that I could dance ballet.
Which living person do you most admire?
Maybe Marina Warner. She's a fairy tale scholar. She has this very, very fine mind. And I read a lot of her as I prepare to retell my fairy tales. She's somebody that you can, whose thinking you can trust. And I would like to be that sort of person, I suppose.
Helen, you've lived so many places, including Prague and London and Berlin. What's your city for all time to live in?
Oh, to live in? I think I am living in my city. But I love Istanbul. Like, I really, really love Istanbul.
Why Istanbul?
Actually, it's a little bit like Prague, but in that it's filled with symbols that are very difficult to interpret with the top level of your mind. So you have to sort of relax into, I guess, the codes of the city. And then there's the Bosphorus, which has its own character. The food is great. The people are very nice to me. Yeah, I like Istanbul.
What do you lie about?
Origin, increasingly.
Why?
Because I don't want to deal with all the stuff that people have to do with origin. I was on a plane with somebody and she was patting my leg and listing countries in Africa that I might be from, and I just said no, it's okay, I'm just black. Because I just didn't want to get into it, because where can the conversation go after that? It just seems so futile.
What's the quality you most like in a man?
Kindness.
What's the quality you most like in a woman?
That she be an adventuress.
Who are your favorite writers?
Oh, so many. I love Marquez, Robert Walser, Daniel Kalms, Gombrowicz, who else? Ali Smith, Jenny Fagan. I've only read one book of hers, but she's tremendous. Her book is called The Panopticon, and she has a heroine who hallucinates and then frightens her own hallucinations. So literally, it's this girl is so tough and so full of life. She sees faces come out of the walls and she says, "Can I help you?" And the faces just immediately recede. That's life force. I love Jenny Fagan. Who else? I could go on and on and on, by the way. Maybe we should go to the next question. Three more. Three more absolute favorites. Kelly Link, Jesse Ball. Who else? I've got one more. I should make this good. Well, I have to be loyal. Emily Dickinson.
Good for you. Good for Emily. Do you have a motto?
Yes, fruits, not sports.
That's great. 3, 4, or 5 desert island discs.
Okay. The Flamingos, My Foolish Heart. Boys to Men, The End of the Road. Third. Maybe something by Elgar, we'll just say. I haven't decided what.
Forgive my ignorance. Are these all British artists?
Two of them, no, one of them's doo-wop, the Flamingos, Boys to Men is 90s R&B, the third one, yeah, Elgar is an English composer.
Do you mean the Victor Young, My Foolish Heart?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Thank you. Bill Evans does that pretty nicely, too.
Oh, I'll have to look into this.
Helen Oyeyemi, What do you think it was the keynote of your own personality? That's a William James question.
Oh, really? Keynote, evasiveness.
Of the whole personality?
Pretty much.
Not in this conversation, I don't think. What's your most treasured possession?
It's a little copy of Goblin Market that a friend of mine sent me when I really, really, really needed it.
When and where were you happiest?
Probably at the time in my life when I got to read the most, which was probably between 13 and 15.
Lucky you.
Mm.
Is there a greatest regret?
No.
Good. Greatest extravagance?
Tea. There's this tea company, a French tea company called Mariage Frère. And I found a place that sells it in Prague. It's a headache, but I have to have it.
How expensive is it?
We're talking about maybe £17 for 100 grams. £17 is, what, $30 just for a little bit of tea.
How would you like to die?
In a bathtub.
At a very ripe, old, wise age, I hope.
Oh, yes, when I'm very old.
Helen Oyeyemi of Boy, Snow, and Bird, thank you so much for your work.
Thank you, Chris.
And for this conversation.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Mary McGrath and Max Larkin produced, recorded, and edited this conversation with Helen Oyeyemi. Her fifth novel is titled Boy, Snow, Bird. Check out her prose, and please add your own two bits to our conversation at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Leiden. Thank you for being part of the Open Source Podcast Project.